This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. In mid-September, Cincinnati writer Doug Spack hopped on a Greyhound bus with a plan to travel cross-country, see America, reconnect with old friends, and make new ones along the way, covering 10,000 miles all by bus. Spack is the creative and strategic director with Platinum Marketing Group. He's blogging about what he calls the American journey, sharing the stories of the people he meets on his travels. We caught up with him in West Palm Beach, Florida, and Doug, we are glad we could catch up with you on the road.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Mark.
Now, you started this journey on September the 15th, and you're in West Palm Beach right now. Tell me about the other places you've been.
Well, I mapped out my trip to align with cities where I had friends, in many cases friends I hadn't seen in 10, 15, 20 years. So I left Cincinnati, and my first destination, which was actually the longest leg of the trip, was to Casper, Wyoming, where I have a good friend. And then from Casper, I went to Portland, and then down the coast, where I have friends in San Diego and L.A. And then I went across the southern tier of the country to Houston, spent some time in New Orleans, up to Birmingham and Atlanta, and then down into Florida the last couple of days.
You're going to end up doing 10,000 miles on a bus. What inspired you to make this journey?
Well, I call it my my field of dreams moment. I'm not sure that everybody always has those, where that voice comes to you and says you have to do something that sounds crazy on the surface. It was the week following there was the shooting in Charleston, if you remember, at the church, and then the next day, Officer Kim was shot in Cincinnati, and it was a period that I was finding myself being very disillusioned, and saying to myself, "Is this the best we can do as people?" It really was, and then so miraculously, the people, relatives of the victims of that church, they came out and they forgave the guy who was the shooter, and I thought, you know, that's an amazing story. And I was, I write in the morning, I journal, and in the morning, one day this voice came to me and said, go tell their stories. And I saw myself on a bus. I mean, it really happened that way. And, you know, I argued with the voice. I said, does it have to be a bus? And could it be Uber or something else a little bit more comfortable? But now it was clearly going to be the bus.
So the voice was adamant, it has to be a bus. And
it had to be the bus. Right.
Why a Greyhound bus in particular?
I don't, other than the, I forget what that is, the super bus or whatever, it's, I don't know of another bus line that travels the country. I mean, Greyhound, they go to pretty much every small town that there is. I think they have 1,300 stops or something. So it really, to do something like this and to be able to engage people, there was really no other way to do it. Because a lot of people said, well, you should take the train, and the train routes are limited. So I really couldn't do what I'm doing on a train or really any other mode of transportation.
Why make this journey, Doug, at this point in your life?
Well, I guess it starts with that voice that came to me and said, you got to do this. And I think at any other time in my life, I probably would have not paid attention to it. And I'm fortunate to be at a place now career-wise where I do freelance writing, and I work for a terrific company. Kim Wiest, who's the president and the founder of PMG, she was totally supportive, because reality is there's Wi-Fi, there's electric on the bus, and so my office travels with me, and you know I'm fully wired. So while I'm also traveling, I'm working, and I've got several other clients who I do some content writing for. So the reality is it's almost a perfect time to do this. I'm not tethered to an office, and I do have some freedom to move about. And so it seemed like the stars aligned in some fashion.
So you're the ultimate telecommuter right now, and it's working out pretty well?
I think it's working out terrific. I mean, I haven't had any complaints from those with whom I'm working, but yeah, I would say it is sort of the ultimate telecommuter gig, and you know, it's worked out fine.
Now, what do your friends and then your family think of you making this journey?
Well, I don't think I would have done this without my wife Kate totally supporting it, and you know, she's been on some of her own adventures in years past, where she's gotten in a Jeep and taken her camping gear and you know traveled cross country. So when I sort of sheepishly said this to her, that I heard this voice, I mean, thinking she was going to say, "Well, yeah, that's great, but you know, you got to take the garbage out now." She could not have been more. I mean, she just jumped all over and said, "You got to do it. So you got to listen to the voice. You've got to go and do this." And so, you know, that's probably been the biggest impetus for me, is that she's just been 100% supportive to the degree that, you know, there have been a couple of times when I said, you know, maybe I'm going to cut this short. And she said, "You're not cutting this short," you know, and she's even said, "Why don't you go further?" And I'm thinking, well, don't you miss me? Don't you want me home? But, you know, that's really how supportive she's been. And it's been great. And, you know, my friends, it's sort of an interesting, when I tell people this, their first reaction is, it's about the bus. You know, you're going to go by bus to do this. But you know, as I've started to write and people have seen the stories, it sort of comes together. You know, the bus is no longer the issue. It's, wow, you're really doing what you said you were going to do. And that's been the fascinating aspect to this.
What's been the biggest challenge, Doug, so far that you've faced on your journey?
I would say it's a physical challenge. I'm a very light sleeper. And there have been a number of days where I'm gone 24 hours on the bus. And so you have to do overnight on the bus. And it's that's a grind, because if you don't get sleep, it sort of plays with your head and your emotions. And so I've had some days that have been particularly long, just because of lack of sleep. And plus you're not stopping at gourmet restaurants along the way. You're stopping at truck stops and McDonald's. Not that it's bad, but you're not really getting it's fast food. And so I've had to plan ahead, take protein bars, try to have some food, some protein that was somewhat good for me. So I would say it's been the physical part of it more than anything.
I'm talking with Doug Speck, who hopped on a Greyhound bus on September 15th. He plans to travel cross-country, see America, reconnect with his friends, and make some new ones along the way, and tell their stories. He's going to be covering 10,000 miles all by bus. And, Doug, what's been the best part so far of making this trip?
Without question, Mark, it's the ability to engage with people. I mean, I was really concerned about, would people want to talk to me? Because, you know, it's you're going into a bus terminal and there are a lot of, you know, older people there's a certain amount of wariness about other people. And so I've had to let it happen organically, where you just strike up a conversation with somebody and ask them where they're going. And if they sort of come back and say, "Where are you going?" I'll tell them and tell them about my journey. If they seem interested, then we'll start. But I've been fascinated by how open people have been with their stories. In many cases, some I haven't even written yet, where people came to me, saw me talking to somebody and said that I'd like to tell you my story. So it's really been, it's been gratifying to be able to engage people and to hear their stories. And then I think the other thing for me, from a personal note, is the reactions that I've been getting to the blog from readers has been so uplifting. You know, it's not just friends saying good job. I mean, it's people who have read the blogs and have been, in some cases, moved by stories or have laughed at stories, and that's been really gratifying.
Now, you say most of the people, when you approach them, they're, you know, after you talk to them for a few minutes, they're pretty open to talking to you. Have you gotten any other types of reactions from people as you've tried to talk to them on the bus?
Oh yeah, no, I have people who just don't want to be anywhere near you. And, you know, they're not interested. They think you're trying to sell them something. It really is sort of, I just sort of let it happen. And, you know, there's a catch 22 about being on the bus, which is the more crowded the bus is, the better chance I have of talking to somebody if somebody sits next to me or right across the aisle from me. But it's the least comfortable part of the trip, especially if you're doing it overnight. So when the bus is empty, it's sort of nice because you can spread out, but it's then harder to engage people. But, you know, there are people who just not interested, or, you know, some people have said my story is not interesting, and I try to convince them that everybody's story is. But when they sort of make that decision, I don't push it.
Are the buses, for the most part, are they typically full? Do people ride the Greyhound bus like they did decades ago?
You know, you'd be really, I was surprised. There are, now it'll depend on the route you're going on. So when I was traveling through Montana and Washington going towards Portland, the bus was not terribly crowded, but on some of the routes, as you get south into California, or going from L.A. to Arizona, you know, a lot of those routes were packed. In fact, my very first trip was from Cincinnati to Casper, and I had to go through Dayton. And from Dayton, almost the whole way to Denver was, I had to sit next to somebody. So, yeah, I'm really, it's surprising to me how many people travel on Greyhound bus. I mean, and for many people, it's the only way they can get around. So, it really was interesting.
Doug, has there been any time where anyone's been aggressively negative to you about doing this, or any time when you were concerned about your safety?
No, never. I've never had a situation where I felt threatened. I don't really impose myself on somebody or sort of come into their space. I try to strike up a conversation that's as simple as, so where are you heading? And I did have one situation, which was actually, I wrote about it. It was pretty funny. And I'm trying to even think where it was. It was one of these late night things. And a young lady got on the bus, and she was sitting in the aisle seat across from me. And you know, she was just, you see somebody and you say, this is an interesting person. She had a ducky umbrella, and she had a stuffed ant, like a stuffed lamb. And I was guessing she was maybe 20, 21. And she just had all these blankets, and she had hardcover books and, you know, crackers. I mean, she just had all this stuff. And so at a break, one of the bus stops, I decided that instead of getting off, I was just going to stay there. And I thought, well, I'll strike up a conversation with her. And I, before the light came on, I said, so where are you heading? And the light came on, and I knew I had made a mistake because she was probably 15. And she told me in no uncertain terms and language I can't use on the show that I should mind my own business. And, you know, I wrote that I could imagine her with her mom before she got on the bus, and her mom was saying, all right, so, you know, if some creepy guy tries to talk to you, you tell him,
yeah,
when to get off.
Exactly.
And, you know, so it was really funny because, I mean, her reaction was priceless. And I was that guy who her mom reminded her of.
Oh, no, it's come true.
It's happening right here. And I imagine her having like a taser or like this big thing of mace, you know, that, you know, she was ready for me. And, you know, it's like 10 o'clock at night and I hadn't shaved and I was a creepy guy. I really was.
But that's the worst. Okay.
No, that was really the worst. I think that most people, most of my friends, there is this sort of reaction of, and I think there have probably been a lot of stories, maybe many which are urban myths about Greyhound bus and things happening bad on the bus. And I have not experienced that. I mean, I'm aware of where I am. I'm not taking, because most of the Greyhound stations are in tough neighborhoods because, you know, 50, 60 years ago, Greyhound was the place to travel. And those areas were the nice areas of town, but not so much. So, you know, I know not to, you know, take a walk in the neighborhood. I'm sort of vigilant about what I'm doing, but I've really not had any problems other than the 15-year-old girl with individuals.
Which is just a complete misunderstanding.
I wish I could just talk to her mother and say, I'm not that guy.
Yeah, you know, you were saying that you were disillusioned when you decided to set out on this trip. So far, has this helped to restore some of your faith in mankind and humanity?
It truly has. It has been rewarding from that point of view. I use the word redemption a lot because that's a lot of the stories that I hear of people who have lived on the streets, been addicted to heroin, have lost everything. So many of these stories are about people on this bus going to a new life. And that's been very uplifting. So yeah, it has renewed, you know, my faith that it's cliche, but we're a country that gives people second chances. And you know, a lot of the people that I talk to, that's exactly what they were doing. They were going for a second chance. They were traveling somewhere to begin a new life because where they were, for whatever reasons, it didn't work out. So yeah, that was, it's been really a positive thing for me.
Doug, can you tell me some specific examples, specific stories of the people that you've met so far?
Wow. Boy, there's so many.
Let's just John, for instance. I was reading the blog about John. He's got quite a story. He was released from prison, and you met him on the bus. And...
Oh yeah. I'm sorry. I talked. I mean, here was a guy who was on his way to Seattle, and he was one of these guys who was sort of, when you look at him, a little menacing. I mean, he was a scary guy, but he had heard me interviewing somebody, and he imposed himself on me. And he said, "So what you writing? Are you writing a book?" And I told him what I was doing. He sat right down next to me and said, "Well, I'll tell you my story." And I, you know, he had this huge scar on the side of his face. I was not about to argue with him.
Well, you saw the scar and you said, "He must have a story."
Yeah, I said, "Well, I'm going to listen to his story because he wants to tell me his story." but he was raised. He was coming from Cleveland, where his mom, he was visiting his mom. She had been sick, but yeah, he had been in various maximum security federal prisons for 20 years for 11 counts of armed robbery. And I asked the question that I guess it was an obvious question, but I was interested of, and why did you go down that path? And he said, I didn't have the education. I was living in Cleveland. I couldn't get a good job. And I thought, what do I have to lose? And so, you know, he did it for a while. He was living the life of crime for a while, and then he got caught. And so he ended up in prison, and he was going through the litany of prisoners that he had befriended, John Gotti and a number of people whose names I'm forgetting right now. But so, so he got out of prison and he found work in Seattle for $11 an hour. And I said, "Well, why not stay in Cleveland? And if you're going to do a minimum wage job, you can stay close to home." He said, "I can only make $8 in Cleveland." He said, "I can make that $3 go pretty far." So, you know, he was off to Seattle to find work. Sort of that starting life over thing.
Yeah, did you ever verify whether he knew Gotti?
No, I didn't verify that. And he may not have. I mean, but, you know, I don't even know that he was in prison for 20 years. There's no way to verify any of those stories. So, I'm just sort of going on faith that a lot of these people are telling the truth, because what else do they have to lose to tell the truth? So, but yeah, you're right. I couldn't tell you that he was in prison with John Gotti.
And then let's see, another you met Clover in Dayton, right? What was that story?
Yeah, that was Clover is a transsexual female, meaning that for the last year she has been taking hormone treatments to change from a male to a female. And she was in the Dayton station when I came from Cincinnati, and just, you know, your eyes just are drawn to her because she was dressed very flamboyantly. She had this sort of wreath in her head, and she was wearing chiffon, but she was clearly a male because she had, you know, 5 o'clock shadow. And so it was sort of interesting to watch people looking at her. I was more observing other people than I was her. And so for whatever reason, we never had a chance to sit together. And then I finally sat with her Kansas City to Denver, which was a 10-hour trip. And we started to chat, and she was very open about her life. She was 19, which for me has some meaning because my son is 20. So I was thinking about what people go through in their lives. And she grew up in a fundamentalist Christian home in the Cape Cod area. And she knew from a really young age that there was something different about her. And it was only until she got in her teens that she realized what that was. And she was the fourth child. She was the youngest of four children. The first three were daughters. And the father was so overjoyed when the son came, because the father was the last in the lineage. And he saw the son as a way of carrying on the family name. But when Clover, and by the way, she wouldn't tell me what her her birth name was. When she announced, when she was 16, she came and told her parents that she was a transsexual. Her father threw her out of the house. I mean, just threw her out to the street. And so she lived on the streets and, lived in the world of drugs. And so it was a very difficult life. But she was on her way to San Francisco, where she felt that she would be more accepted, and try to find another life there. And it was interesting because I said to her, "When do you ever talk to your parents?" And she said, "My last conversation with my father was when I called him to tell him that I had legally changed my first and last name, and that his name would go no farther." And that was really powerful moment. Moment of strength, and she, you know, I could see it in her eyes that she was a strong person, and she had survived a lot of stuff, and that she really felt that, you know, being in a place like San Francisco out west would be a good start for her, because she'd be more accepted for who she is. So that was a powerful story.
Are you finding that a lot of these stories are about surviving and overcoming that you're running into with these folks on the bus?
Oh, there's no question that everybody, one of the themes that has come out is that I've talked to a lot of people who've gone through addiction, either drug or alcohol or a combination of both, and, you know, maybe that addiction has put them on the streets, for example, and so a lot of these people are sort of in recovery and looking again to find a new life, to have a fresh start, to get away from the influences that might have got them back to being an addict or whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, it really is. It's stories of people who have really been down and out and have picked themselves up and said, I'm going to do this differently.
So where are you headed next, Doug?
Well, I'm headed from here today up to right into the teeth of Joaquin, the hurricane that's forming. My son goes to school in the Western Hills of North Carolina, so I'm going to spend a few days with him, and then I go up the coast where I know some friend in Maryland who's also a client who I do some work for, and then New York, where I started my advertising career 30-some years ago, and so I'm going to spend a couple days there. And then I'm going to head towards home, and my last stop will be Pittsburgh, where I grew up. and then back to Cincinnati 2 weeks from now, give or take.
So about 2 months altogether?
It'll be about 6 weeks, give or take.
Would you recommend doing this with just anyone?
Well, I will say this, Mark, I talked about sort of the negatives, this physical aspect of being on a Greyhound bus. I've seen some beautiful things from the windows, through the windows of that bus. I mean, it's a beautiful country. And so I think traveling by bus, if you really just want to let somebody else drive and you want to read a book and look out the window and see some beautiful country, it really is a fascinating and rewarding trip from that regard. I mean, going into the Portland area along the Columbia River with the Cascade Mountains there's just nothing like it. So, yeah, I'm not negative about Greyhound bus. I mean, it's not, you sort of have to know what you get. It's not going to be a plane, which, frankly, it might even be better than a plane these days. And you do get to see, it's a beautiful country. I'd do it again. I'd take a bus again. I don't think I'd go for 2 months in a row.
Doug, thank you for talking with us. Good luck and safe travels to you.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it.
Doug Spack, who is traveling 10,000 miles via Greyhound bus on the American journey. You can follow his travels and the interesting people he's met along the way by visiting his blog at theamericanjourneyproject.com. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our program are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Rick Andrus. I'm Mark Caney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next on 91.7 WVXU.